Welcome, everyone, to another edition of our series called Everyone Has a Story. And we are going to get to why we had that beautiful song coming in for our interview in just a bit. But first, I want to introduce to our KDWA listeners, Paula Trejo. And she is here to tell us her story. Her story is very bittersweet in many ways, but we're so happy that you came in today, Paula. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me, Mo.
Thank you. So first of all, we will get to the reason why we did the Hark the Herald Angels song in a bit. But tell us a little bit about your story, because I think people have obviously heard the Trejo name for many, many years in Hastings. And you and your husband, David, were together for many years, and you were both in a horrific accident. So tell us a little bit about what brought you to Hastings before all of this, and then tell us about your story, wherever you want to start it.
I was born and raised in Hastings, never left. And then I was fortunate enough to meet my husband here in the old Buccaneer Bowling building.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, almost. It had happened almost 23 years ago when I met him, and we were married for 17 years. David retired in 2016.
And what did he do for a living?
Construction. Okay. Superintendent for a construction company. And so we bought our house in town here, the south end of town, and we remodeled it so that I could have my own daycare preschool in it.
Oh, nice.
I had worked in a center previous to that for 9 years. And he said, you know, you can do it. He was my motivator. He said, we'll buy a house. It has a separate entrance, classroom. Everything is all separate from the house. And he had a vision and helped me to fulfill that dream of just having my own thing.
And that was in 2016?
2004.
2004, sorry.
Yep, 2004 we did that. Going back to 2016, that's when he retired from construction.
So you had your daycare for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for a lot of years. And the kids loved him, too. You know, he would come home from work about 2 o'clock at nap time, and he'd sneak down, and the kids would be sleeping, and he'd, you know, come just to give me a kiss, and I'd always, to not wake up the kids. And then he'd come down after they got up and kind of wrestle with them and, you know, get them all wound up and leave again. But then when he retired, he would be home a lot during the day. So his wardrobe consisted mainly of flip-flops and shorts. So whenever he would come down to talk to me and actually had a shirt and jeans or whatever on, the kids would be like, Paula, he's leaving. Because they knew when he had clothes on, he must have been leaving.
Isn't that funny how kids are so smart?
So, but they adored him too. But yeah, he helped so many people. I always told him when he retired, I didn't know when he had time to actually work. He had such a big heart that he would go and help whoever needed it before he did our own stuff at home. So
so he really set your house up because he was in construction.
Yep.
So he knew how to do all those home projects.
Right down to rounding the corners of the walls down in the daycare so the kids, if they ran into them, wouldn't, you know, get cut, or they could just kind of, in a sense, bounce off of the walls, which was a huge, huge thing. So he had a lot of it in mind for me.
And one of the things that you enjoyed doing as a couple was motorcycle riding.
Yep. We rode for many years together. And he, when he retired, he would sometimes take the bike out to South Dakota. His sister has a resort in Pollock, South Dakota. So he would go help her on the resort. And so he would have his motorcycle out there a lot, and our motorhome also. So I missed him a lot. That was hard on me when he would be gone. But then he would come home. But in 2017, his sister was getting married. And so he spent a little more extra time out there that summer helping to do things to prepare for her wedding and do some work on her resort, remodeling her dining area. So he was home that summer and stayed until after my birthday, beginning of August. And then he went out again because she was getting married more the middle of August. And then, it was getting to be the end of summer. I was getting ready for another school year because not only with the daycare, I also teach in the daycare. Also, I'm a preschool teacher. So I was getting ready for another school year, and he was supposed to be coming home Labor Day weekend that year. But she had a little bit more work for him to do, so it wasn't going to work out. And it was getting to the point where I really missed him, and he was missing me. So that weekend, as soon as I closed the daycare that Friday night, Labor Day weekend, I got a ride with his brother and his wife out to Pollock. Just spent some time with David. That Saturday was nice. We got there early that morning, spent the day doing stuff together. That would have been September 2nd. Went out on the motorcycle, just hung out. Then the following day, a group of people were going to get together. That would have been September 3rd. That morning, he left the motorhome before me and said he was going to go get the motorcycle ready and to meet him down at the resort. So I grabbed my coat, my helmet. I was going to start walking down the dirt road to the resort, and he came driving in his sister's car and said he forgot his diabetes medicine. So he's like, hop in, go grab it. So I jumped out of the car, was going to run into the motorhome, and he's like, grab my helmet while you're in there. And something about David, he would wear it sometimes knowing that I liked him to wear it.
Sure.
But that morning, just to tell me that, you know, grab my helmet. So I did. Well, anyways, went back down to the motorcycle. We were waiting on some people. Got on the bike. It was a beautiful day, just, you know, beautiful day to just be together. Five or six other bikes with us. I should say, too, while we were waiting, I was picking up monarch butterflies in the road, and David's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm saving them, because at that time of year out in South Dakota, the roads are flooded with monarch butterflies. So I was picking up these butterflies and putting them in the ditch so that they won't get ran over. You know, I don't know, just it's how it was going. So we're on the bikes. We had maybe a handful of stops that we stopped that day. It wasn't like drinking or anything like that, just having fun, stopping for water or a pop, you know. The last thing I remember, we were getting on the bike, and that was going to be our last stop, and then we were going to head back to the resort for the night. I remember getting on the back of the motorcycle with David and telling him that the wind had really picked up. And the next thing I remember after that is total darkness. And I remember hearing familiar voices, but not being able to see anything. And seeing a few flashes of lights, but then out again. And then the next thing I remember after that was waking up in the hospital.
And what hospital was that?
Sanford in Bismarck. And then I was told later, after the fact, that we were on the border of North and South Dakota, only maybe 3 miles away from where the resort was. And we were taking a curve, and an 80-plus mile-an-hour wind blew us off the road. And David had the motorcycle corrected in the ditch, but then we hit a rut in the ditch from a tractor tire. I got thrown 20 feet, and he stayed with the motorcycle, but it flipped a few times, and he hit his head. And in all the reports, it says that I was alert and awake the whole time and screaming, but I don't remember any of it. So,
did any of the other people you were with get blown off their motorcycle?
No.
Did they see the accident happen?
Yeah. So EMT paramedics came. David got airlifted from the site, and so many people were telling our family, I guess, that they didn't think he was going to make it. And then I got ambulanced to the nearest hospital in Linton at the time, and then I got airlifted, I guess, from Linton to Bismarck, where David was. But I don't remember any of that, and I'm so thankful. Over the past couple of years since it's happened, it's been a while now, but every now and then I would get like what feels like a panic attack, and I would see David's helmet ahead of me, but then it would go away again. So I think part of that is my mind knowing it.
Of course.
But I'm so thankful that I don't know it.
So how long were the two of you in the hospital?
We both were in the hospital in Bismarck for 2 weeks. I had multiple injuries, and David the worst with a traumatic brain injury, so he was in the ICU. And then when he was getting discharged, I was able to get discharged too. But I got driven home as long as I had home health care, and he got sent by ambulance to Bethesda in St. Paul. And then he stayed in Bethesda for another couple of months in a coma still. And then they said that he was stable enough that he had to leave the hospital, so I had to find different care for him. So, and my first thought was I just wanted him to come home, but my body was still healing and I wasn't strong enough to take care of him quite yet. So he was at Regina here in town for a little over a year until my body got strong enough to take care of him, which would have been March of last year that I was able to finally bring him home to take care of him.
So with his traumatic brain injury, he really was a changed person.
Very much so. In a lot of ways, I felt like I lost my husband at that time. But then he was getting stronger and trying to talk, trying to do things. I was driving him back and forth down to the Mayo Clinic in Courage, Kenny, you know, 3 to 4 days every week. You know, just to get him therapy and to meet with doctors, neurologists.
It's overwhelming because you don't know what you don't know.
Right. I mean, I've never known anyone with a traumatic brain injury, let alone it being my best friend and my husband at the time. You know, so I was trying to understand all of it too and wanting so much for him. So, so much for him. And, you know, I wasn't able to stay with him at first with all of my injuries, especially with my back injury. I had broken my back in 2 spots. So I wasn't able to stay in the hospitals with him and such. But once I could, I would stay at least once a night at Regina with him a lot on Friday nights or on the holidays. I would spend the night with him, which was hard too because they just have a little pull-out chair. So that wasn't super on my back, but... And at the time, we still have them, Pablo and Lucas, two of our Shelties, that they could come with me every day to Regina to see David also, and they could stay the night too when I stayed the night. So
it's pretty special.
Yeah, so, and they needed it too. It was just really hard on them also. I never realized how much situations affect animals until this happened to us also. It was very, very hard on Pablo and Lucas also, just not having... David there, seeing how I was changed.
They pick up on all that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I finally was able to take David home March of last year. And he just, in so many ways, kept getting stronger. And then in August, I didn't see it coming. It would have been on August 20th. It was a regular night. I got ready to go to bed, and I would do all of David's cares. It was just me and him and the boys. I got David ready for bed, too, because we had an early morning in Rochester the next day to go get fitted for a new head brace for his wheelchair. So I was excited about that, because he had started walking and such down there, too, with help.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, so we got to bed. It had felt like I had been asleep for a long time, but only in hindsight, realizing afterwards it maybe only had been 45 minutes.
That's how exhausted you were.
Yeah, so laid down about 11:30, quarter to 12. I was awoken by David making sounds in here. I thought he was trying to talk because he had been trying to talk. So I sat up in bed, and... How it was in our bedroom was I had the hospital bed for him and a little twin bed butted right up next to it so I could be right next to him. And so I sat up and I looked right at him and I said, "Hi." And he turned his head a little bit and looked at me, and his eyes, people that don't know, with a traumatic brain injury, it can affect their eyes, someone also. And so David's eyes were... One eye was okay, and the other one would kind of just do what it wanted. But he looked right at me, and his eyes were okay again. And then he closed his eyes. You know, you see in movies when people die that their eyes are open. David's weren't. He closed them, and then he stopped breathing. So I jumped out of bed, and I ran around to where he was. And I... quick call 911 because when I flipped the lights on, I could already see that his lips and his skin was starting to turn blue. So I called 911, and I don't remember a lot about that, but I just remember the man told me to get him on the floor, so I picked him up and I put him on the floor.
How did you pick him up?
I have no idea.
No kidding.
And
oh, Paul.
I tried doing CPR, but I already knew he was gone. So, and both Pablo and Lucas were in there with me too, and I just remember trying to do CPR, and I remember screaming at David not to leave, but I already knew he was gone.
We're going to take a little break and come back with part two of our very special conversation with Paula Trejo, who lost her husband to traumatic brain injury as a result of a motorcycle accident. We'll continue with Paula's story in part two of our conversation. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth. Everyone has a story on AM 1460 and FM 97.7. KDWA in Hastings.